There's a book out called The Perils of Pearl Bryan, Betrayal and Murder in the Midwest in 1896, and it's a book written by James McDonald and Joan Kristen about a murder right across the river in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. And with us on the phone is Jim McDonald, one of the co-authors. Good evening.
Good evening, Lee.
In the foreword, you talk about a 1968 note written by your grandfather about this murder by two dental students. Tell us about what happened when you read that and how it led to this book.
I retired as professor at the Indiana University School of Dentistry in Indianapolis, and I came across my grandfather's roughly a 14-page typed life story in which he described how as a 13-year-old newsboy in 1896 in Kentucky, his newspaper sales had really boomed during the quote-unquote famous Pearl Bryan murder case and the subsequent trials of the dental students who were accused of the crime. And two things jumped out at me. Famous Pearl Bryan murder case, I'd never really heard of it at the time. And then secondly, reading that two dental students were possibly involved. I had taught dental students my entire career, so I thought I'll do some research into this and see what dental schools they went to. And lo and behold, they had attended two different dental schools. One, my dental school in Indianapolis briefly, and then they had transferred and attended the Cincinnati dental school. It was then called, I think, the Ohio College of Dental Surgery there. And so I was off and running after I found that out.
Your research also included a lot of historical settings for the 1896, which was the end of the Gilded Age, and you wove those into the story of the murder quite well.
Thank you. I have always been very interested in history, even though I was a dental professor, so it kind of gave me an excuse to review some of the things that were going on in the gay 90s, and it was a fascinating time era. And again, I learned a lot by doing that research and placing the murder and the trials within that time frame.
The focus of your book is the murder of a young pregnant woman along Alexandria Pike in Fort Thomas. Who was she?
She was a young woman, 11th born out of 12 children from Greencastle, Indiana. And she had been made pregnant by one of the dental students and had traveled to Cincinnati to either convince the dental student to marry her or to rid themselves of the pregnancy in some manner. And so she traveled alone to Cincinnati by train and was there 3 or 4 days with the very unfortunate outcome of her death at the end of the time.
And Greencastle is located about halfway between Indianapolis and the Illinois border?
Yes, it is. It's basically west and a little north of Indianapolis. She had told her parents that she was going to visit a dear friend who had moved to Indianapolis. So ostensibly she was in Indianapolis during all this time. In reality, she was in Cincinnati.
Scott Jackson, he was the fellow who impregnated her and had a checkered past up on the East Coast before he moved to Indiana with his mother in 1894. And his roommate was Alonzo Walling down here in Cincinnati.
That's correct. They lived in a boarding house there in Cincinnati, which was located next to the Robinson Opera House, named after the famous circus manager. And he actually maintained some animals during the winter in the lower story of that opera house. So it must have been interesting living next door at that time.
And these two fellows, well, Scott Jackson anyway, researched poison and tried a number of different times to have her get an abortion, tried all kinds of ways to get rid of this child that he didn't want to be responsible for before the killing.
He did. And in fact, dental students and medical students took some of the same classes in some of the same buildings. And he picked the brain of many of the medical students there, asking them what poison might be the most powerful and which one would be the most likely to produce death, and so this was circumstantial evidence, but came out in the trial how he had planned this apparently well before the event actually happened.
And they took a carriage with her over to Alexandria Pike, and the horrific part of it was that she was left there 4.5 months pregnant, decapitated, and the head was missing.
That's true, and although they never admitted to that, the prosecutor suggested strongly that they didn't want her to be identified, and they thought that by removing her head, that would confuse the identification and that they would never figure out exactly who it was. But there were a couple of Cincinnati detectives and the sheriff of Campbell County in Kentucky who really did a wonderful job in solving this case. And about their only clue when they stumbled across the body was the tiny shoes the victim was wearing, size 3. And they were able to track those shoes back to Greencastle, Indiana. And after some struggles, they were able to find out that Pearl Bryan had, in fact, been the one who bought those shoes.
I found it interesting, once they were jailed and convicted, which happened pretty quickly, the trial date was April 7, 1896, postponed to April 21st, lasted 21 days with 196 witnesses, and by summer of 1896, they were ready to be hanged.
It did happen very quickly. Scott Jackson, his trial was first, and then there was a 2-week break, and then they launched into the second trial. There were a number of appeals filed and so forth, so the executions did not happen until March of 1897.
They were moved from Newport's jail to Covington, down to Alexandria, and then there was a big area where people had to have tickets to watch the hanging, which I didn't know any of this kind of historical background.
Yes, they were hanged in the rear of the Newport County courthouse, and you did have to have a ticket. Various estimates that up to 1,000 people were milling around in the area trying to witness this. And until the end, one of the accused dental students, who was only sort of a presumably peripheral participant in this was Alonzo Walling, thought that Scott Jackson would confess on the gallows that Alonzo was not guilty, or at least not as guilty. But that never happened, unfortunately, for Alonzo.
And the trial was covered by the New York Times.
It was at the time, and particularly in the 3-state area here of Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. It was known as the crime of the century, and it was wildly popular in the press, including the New York Times. I have microfilm from a number of their publications about the murder and trials.
How long did it take you to research this book?
Off and on, it took about 3 or 4 years, and I kept stumbling across new information. Initially, my colleague and I thought we would just write an article about it, but as the story unfolded, it became more and more interesting. The libraries and museums around Cincinnati and Newport and Fort Thomas and Alexandria were all very helpful, and they provided pamphlets and old book versions and so forth. So we had to be very careful in interpreting the accuracy of these reports. But collectively, all this information together portrayed a pretty clear picture of what had happened.
Thank you very much. It's a well-researched and fascinating insight into our region's history.
Well, thank you very much. I think a lot of your local listeners may have heard of this story before, and hopefully this will clarify a few things.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
That was James McDonald, who, along with Joan Kristen, has written a book called The Perils of Pearl Bryan, Betrayal and Murder in the Midwest in 1896. You can find a link at our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.